Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 15th. If it's scary, be wary. That's one of the warning signs of spin, a red flag that you should be skeptical of the claim that's being made by the politician or maybe the advertiser. We will talk about this hour common ways that politicians and marketers and anyone who wants to sell us something try to deceive us or convince us to buy their product or to vote for them. Our guest will tell us the other warning signs of spin and hype and bogus news and common tricks that are used to deceive us. And maybe you will be interested in finding out how to find trustworthy and objective sources of information. We're going to talk with the co-author of the new book, Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. And we welcome maybe your examples of spin. Do you know when you're being spun? You can give us an example of something maybe that you've heard, a claim by a politician or through an ad, and we can try to decipher it. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Brooks Jackson. He runs the Annenberg Public Policy Center's website, which is factcheck.org, was an investigative reporter for the Associated Press, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN, is the author of two previous books, and co-author with Kathleen Hall Jamison of Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
I was going to start off a little bit differently, but I was just corrected by my producer because we had written down that you were the author of several books, and you corrected her to say it was really two previous or two earlier books. You wanted to be accurate and precise and not some generality of but like many, several, that kind of thing.
Yes, my wife, who's in public relations, or was for years, says that's a bad habit.
But it's also a way, too, you say beware of that if you see sort of a, you know, many people say or most scientists agree that that's sort of lazy journalism.
Well, you know, that's one of the first things that young reporters learn, and certainly one of the first things I learned, which is to write around the holes in your reporting if you don't really know how many scientists say something. Well, many or most, something like that. If you were to say 47 scientists say something so-and-so, you should be able to name those scientists, know who they are. But most or many, it's just a sign that the reporter's a little hazy on the facts.
Yeah. And the reporters these days are a little hazy or lazy or have too much going on that we can't trust the media in general to decipher all of this spin for us?
Well, just because a reporter says falls back on a vague word might reflect not that they're lazy, but that they are rushing to get a story out on deadline, and you can't nail down every fact the way you would like to by 4 p.m. this afternoon. Sometimes you got to read the next day's story. But I think in general it's true. People don't realize. We've sort of been conditioned to believe that there must be some truth in advertising, even political advertising, because we've had for years, decades, generations, truth in advertising legislation. The Federal Trade Commission will shut down an ad if it, for example, advertises a twirling ballerina doll that doesn't really twirl unless you twirl it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an actual case. But there's no truth in advertising legislation for political speech. Really can't be under the First Amendment. The whole concept of our democracy is that politicians can say what they want and get as much information or disinformation out to the voters as they can, and the voters are supposed to sort it out. But the media, the news media, reporters, I think, personally, could be doing a lot better job than they are of refereeing some of the factual disputes that come up in campaigns.
Yeah. Says here, Unspun is the secret decoder ring for the 21st century world of disinformation.
There's a little spin right there, jacket copy.
Yeah. But why did you and Kathleen Hall Jamieson decide to put this together?
Well, it sprang out of the enormous and, to us, surprising response that we got to the website, factcheck.org. I had been doing debunking of political claims and factual claims, political ads at CNN for a long time. CNN was sort of progressively less interested in doing that stuff after the Time Warner merger and... I won't even don't even get me started on that. And when I left CNN, Kathleen offered to bring me over to the Annenberg Public Policy Center and fact check political ads here, which I did. The idea was that we would do a book on the 2004 campaign, deception in the 2004 campaign, and put up our findings along the way on a website. Well, the website just took off beyond our wildest imaginings. We had we were getting regularly 200,000 and 300,000 visitors per day in October of 2004. Had to re-engineer the whole website to take care of the traffic, which was our initial servers were just inadequate for that. And it occurred to us that there was an appetite for this, that people were just tired of being spun, and perhaps if we could share what we had learned about detecting disinformation, finding reliable facts, sort of lay out for people what we do every day here at the website, the kind of research we do, that it might be helpful.
Yeah. In trick number four, how advertisers or politicians try to spin us, trick number four is eye candy. And that relates to your political ad fact-checking, in that if the pictures or the images are positive, that's what we're going to remember or believe, and regardless of what somebody is saying in the text.
That's so true, positive or negative, for that matter. Mm-hmm. What Kathleen's research had turned up when I was at CNN and before I began doing ad watches was that early attempts at debunking false political ads on television had backfired, because reporters, not realizing this effect of the human brain, were doing their stories in the way that reporters commonly do stories. They had written basically a radio script and then illustrated it with the images from the TV ads, full screen, frequently frozen. The effect was that rather than watching a 30-second ad, people were watching a minute and a half or two-minute ad,
mm-hmm.
and they were really kind of tuning out what the reporter was saying. They showed the debunking stories to one set of viewers and the ads to the other, and it turned out the people who watched the debunking stories tended to remember the ads more vividly than the people who just watched the ads. So that's why we use on television various visual techniques, like you'll see graphics slapped across an ad saying misleading or false or whatever. That's an attempt to use visual imagery to reinforce the reporter's message rather than just repeating the spinmeister's message, if you will. But this effect comes up all the time, and every time you see a public official now, we have an illustration in the book of President Bush using this effect by standing in front of a podium with the huge letters spelling out "Plan for Victory."
Right.
That was turns out that plan is not actually worked out.
Right.
But if people had seen that, they didn't even have to listen to what Bush was saying. The message is conveyed. Well, here's a guy with a plan for victory. We have to be aware as consumers of news that our brains work this way, or because the people who want to spin us are well aware of it.
Yeah, and that Mission Accomplished banner didn't work so well either, did it?
There was another, yes.
But, it strikes home the point that if you see, maybe if as a consumer of news you see some big banner that, says something on it, or that to realize that somebody put that there to maybe spin you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you just have to get your brain engaged and think, well, that's interesting. I wonder if that's true. That's sort of the first step.
Yeah. We're talking with Brooks Jackson. He is co-author of the book Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. We're talking about how advertisers and politicians and elected officials try to sell us their ideas or their stuff through half-truths, misleading statements, and out-and-out fabrications. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions about how you can find the truth, or maybe your examples of this kind of spin. And our guest will react to your example. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 21 minutes now past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 15th. Hoping you'll join Ben Marins. He's with you between 4 and 6 this afternoon. Home foreclosures are on the rise nationally, and many see no end in sight. After 5, Ben and his guest will discuss this trend and what it means. That's after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about how we can separate facts from disinformation with Brooks Jackson, who runs the Annenberg Public Policy Center's website, factcheck.org, and is the co-author of the book Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And we have a full line, so let me take some calls. Don in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really agree with the guest that this is a world of spin, you know, through the manipulation of language and everything. But I want to say I think there's something that sort of adds fuel to the fire a little bit, and it's a kind of a natural human tendency to create spin in controversial situations by people seem to line up on one side or another and sort of mute down the information from the opposite side. Things get presented as like either-or propositions when they're really not necessarily so. And I think it's something that people kind of automatically do, and it kind of whips up a certain spin. Like, for instance, you know, people sometimes argue about, you know, high taxes versus social services. And someone who's in favor of social services, for instance, will argue that the taxes won't be so high, or vice versa. Someone who says we want low taxes, they argue that the social services will still somehow not be so bad. When the fact is that, you know, they're both right, you know, the taxes will be higher, the services will be bad, and each side kind of automatically creates a spin of their own.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Don, you're absolutely right, and there's a whole chapter, in fact, devoted to this psychological effect, which psychologists have known about for a long time. We're really talking about something related to what they call cognitive dissonance here, which is the human tendency to accept any sort of flimsy information that supports what you already believe and reject whatever evidence, however solid and undeniable it might be, that might force you into the uncomfortable process of changing your mind. To me, one of the most interesting things in the book is in that chapter. It's an illustration of some brain scans done by a psychologist, professor of psychology down at Emory University, who got together with some brain scientists and took some strong Bush partisans and some strong Kerry partisans and fed them hypothetical examples about their candidates, first supposing that their candidate had said something totally stupid that was going to lose them votes, and then later giving them additional information, hypothetical information, that kind of got their candidate off the hook. And what these brain scans showed, in the words of the psychologists or the brain scientists who studied these scans, is that the areas of the brain normally associated with rational thought did not come into play. It was they were first the pleasure center, or the flight or fight centers when their candidate was threatened, then the pleasure centers when the candidate was allowed to wriggle off the hook. And it's almost like those images from the government scientists or government supported scientists of your brain on drugs. Mm-hmm. We title that little box "Your Brain on Politics."
It's something we all need to be aware of. It's just a natural tendency not to want to hear the other side, even if they have a case.
Don, bringing up the tax example reminded me of one of the examples in your book where you say those who wanted to repeal the estate tax weren't getting much traction until it was renamed the death tax.
Right.
Because then it wasn't
right.
You know, rich people with estates, with estates. It was maybe everybody kind of a thing.
Right. Well, and this is a matter of framing the issue. And what the tendency that we have to be aware of as consumers of news and advertising is that it's too easy to let somebody else's language do our thinking for us by calling something which is properly called the estate tax, and it falls now on only about a small fraction of 1% of the very wealthiest people who die. But by calling it the death tax, people sort of thought, well, it must be a tax on anybody who dies, and I could end up paying that, and that doesn't sound like such a good idea. And that tax is now, as a result of very successful lobbying and spin, scheduled to go out of existence in 2010, and will probably be scaled back or, if the advocates get their way, repealed completely, permanently after that. We're not taking a position on mm-hmm. whether it ought to be repealed or scaled back. That's not our point. The point is that by using words to do other people's thinking for them, the advocates here were successful. There's an example on the other side would be naming the assault weapon ban, when in fact
assault weapons
were
banned.
Were mm-hmm. weapons that looked like assault weapons. They were mm-hmm. not machine guns. Actually, fully automatic weapons had been outlawed since the days of Al Capone and still are, even though the assault weapon ban has gone and faded into history.
It is indeed something that both sides of the political spectrum participate in, the spinning. It's not something that just the Bush administration is doing right now. Democrats do it, too.
Thank you for making that point. Mm-hmm. We get criticized from both sides, depending on whose candidate we're criticizing. But I think a lot of our viewers, our readers, our users, mm-hmm. never know quite what to call them on the Internet. I think most of them appreciate the, our attempts to be as fair and straight as we can, and not, others will have to judge how well we succeed, but that's what we try to do.
David in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call or my question. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if your guest has done any research into the whole global warming public debate, because it seems to me that this is one area that everything that we hear in the mm-hmm. in most of the mass media, that it's overwhelmingly all scientists agree that carbon dioxide is the culprit and that we need big government in order to save us from this. And in the alternative press, you hear differing viewpoints that it's not a slam dunk that this is the reason why, but all kind of competing theories. And so I'm wondering if the guest has researched this, and if not, does he know of any reputable organizations or forums where interested parties can get unbiased information?
I am not an expert on climate change. However, it's and I am blanking right now on the name of the United Nations organization that has issued a series of reports, one most recently. It's a committee-written document. Literally thousands of scientists have collaborated in this, and it does convey what I think you could characterize as the if not a consensus view, at least a view of the vast majority of scientists. The National Academies of Science, they go through a similar process. As some, I would refer you to their website. Some excellent stuff. It's. I guess to summarize, I'll stick my neck out here. The case is extremely strong that nobody disagrees the planet's warming up. Everybody agrees with that. It's happening. It's measurable. The causes are what are in some doubt, but the overwhelming consensus appears to be that human activity has some effect on this. How much you'll get disagreement on. It is probably not as dramatic as was shown by Al Gore's famous chart when he went up on the movie with the crane to to put his projected temperatures on the chart. Some scientists believe that, and there's a certainly a respectable body of thought that it could be that bad. But you do get shades of gray when you the deeper you get into this. It's but the overwhelming majority of scientists, to my knowledge, believe human activity has to some degree responsible for what's going on.
Well, global warming and what could happen is kind of scary. And but you say that one of the warning signs or red flags is if a claim is scary, be wary.
Well, that's true because appeals to fear, of course, tend to short circuit our rational thinking. And I mean, an example, one of the I would say most effective ads that we saw in the 2004 campaign was. One put out by the Bush campaign, in which what was shown on screen was a scary woods, dark woods. You came upon a pack of wolves who were suddenly their eyes were locked on the camera. They at the very end they jump up as though they're going to race at the camera and devour the viewer. The narrator was saying at the time that John Kerry had voted to slash intelligence spending by billions of dollars after the first attack on the World Trade Center, something like that. Well, the fact is, Kerry had supported about a 4% reduction in intelligence spending at a time when many Republicans were also looking to economize on intelligence. This was after the fall of the Berlin Wall and when we were devoting a lot of spending to surveying the Soviet Union that no longer existed. Kerry had pretty consistently supported, absolutely consistently supported military and intelligence budgets for many years. Is what they were referring to was something that had happened after 1993, not after the first tower was hit on 9/11. Majorities of voters went to the polls, nevertheless, believing. According to our polling, which is detailed in the book, that Kerry had voted to cut intelligence after 9/11, which just absolutely was not true.
Chris in Sparta is with us now. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Great show. Very, very entertaining. I'm a big fan of the study of Sten, I guess, listening to the radio all day. I think there's a lot of people in America that are listening with one ear tuned in for the spin and trying to pick through what the agenda is or what they're really trying to say, you know, or maybe what the real story might be underneath what they're saying, and that leaves a lot of people jaded, you know, towards the media, print, whatever, you know, advertising. Two questions that kind of go together on opposite ends of the spin, the spectrum. Can you, as an expert on spin, the author, could you give an example of probably the worst situation of spin, of damage control, maybe that somebody tried to do that was just, you know, went right over, I shouldn't say went over everybody's heads, but was just very unbelievable. And is there ever been an instance where maybe a particular reporter or politician or a news outlet that maybe the language of their article or their reporting was appeared to be working around the holes in their story, but it was actually factual, if that makes sense. It's kind of a backwards spin. And I'll listen for your...
I'm not sure I understand that last...
I'm not sure I do either.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll try to restate it. Something that may have sounded like not a lot of fact-checking in a story, maybe a particular person who does it continuously, or just one particular instance, like I'm thinking of like a news story or something in the paper, where it sounded like it wasn't a very factual story or it had some spin in it, but really it's actually quite factual.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. Something seems unbelievable, but it really was true.
I'll duck the first question first. worst example, I honestly don't know how to measure objectively degrees of deception. You know, what constitutes... I could probably tell you that one falsehood is a bigger deal than another, but how much bigger, I have no idea. So I've always tried to duck these kinds of questions. Yeah. Which side is worse? Who's doing the worst job? I just don't know how to objectively... It'd just be my opinion, and I'm not in the... Trying to get out of the business of opinions and stick to the business of facts. That's a fascinating question, the second one, and I don't have a good example. Basically, something that sounded like spin but wasn't. I think that quite often we run across really astonishing news stories. I remember seeing for the first time a long time ago, I'm going to date myself now, that the news came over the teletype, and we did have teletypes then, that burglars sent from the White House had broken into the office of the psychiatrist of Daniel Ellsberg, a former Pentagon official who'd leaked the Pentagon secret Pentagon papers. And I thought, I will believe anything now. This is just such a totally incredible story, but it was true.
Well, I just opened up the book randomly, and it was something I wanted to ask you about anyway, so I'm not saying that this is the worst spin ever, but why is it, Brooks Jackson, that many Americans believed, and I don't know the exact numbers because I can't find the exact poll here, but when the United States went to war against Iraq in 2003, most Americans believed that Saddam Hussein had something to do with the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. Now, there's an example of the American people believing one thing when they weren't exactly told that specifically, but there was a lot of spinning going on.
Well, it's I wish I could give you reasons. I can. You've stated the facts accurately. Most Americans believe that, despite the absence of any evidence that it was true, and we've seen nothing but denials and contradictions of that notion.
We kind of hear
fewer people believe it now.
Yeah.
But, we went to war believing something as a public, as a body politic, that wasn't true.
But Vice President Dick Cheney was often referring to it by, again, maybe not saying that Saddam Hussein was the mastermind, but...
Yeah, he
you know,
would say
oh,
things,
gee,
I can't recall these exact words, but he would say things like, well, we don't have the proof yet.
Yeah.
It was clearly giving the idea that he believed it was probably true, but he never quite said he had the evidence, because he didn't. But, now, is that a deliberate spin, or was he just deceived? I don't know. I can't read his mind.
Yeah. Bill in Deerfield. Hi, you're on the air.
I have an example of if it's scary, be wary. But first, Dick Cheney did actually say on several occasions on Meet the Press that Al-Qaeda was being harbored in Iraq. What he didn't say was that they were being harbored by us in the no-fly zone in the north. But anyway.
All right, on to the other example.
Yeah, this happened just last week, and it's an incredible spin by Rudy Giuliani talking about how he's going to keep us safe, and if the Democrats get elected to the White House in 2008, we're going back on defense, and 9/11 is going to happen again. Which is really, truly incredible from Giuliani because, you know, after the 93 attack on the World Trade Center, he was the genius that put the rapid response team in the World Trade Tower. So he's really not one to speak.
Well, aside from what Bill thinks about Rudy Giuliani, that is an example of trying to scare us into seeing things his way, Brooks Jackson.
Quite possibly. Of course, I can't predict the future, so I have no idea whether Giuliani or some Democratic president would keep us safer. And that's not the sort of proposition you can check out factually. The sort of statement the listener just made, the caller just made, is the kind of thing I believe you will be hearing more of is... Giuliani gets into a campaign, if he emerges as the front runner or even the nominee, it's just the nature of political contest that questions will be raised.
Next we go to Valerie in Madison. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just listening to what you were saying about why did people believe that Saddam Hussein was somehow involved with 9/11, and what I was remembering is I would be having the evening news on one of the three major networks, I don't know which one, and they'd start the program with this special music and a flag and the words "War on Terror," and then they'd start talking about invading Iraq. I was astonished because I was like, what does invading Iraq have to do with it? But it so clearly made it seem like this was part of the, you know, war on terror. This was a response to 9/11, was we were invading Iraq.
Well, Valerie, that's exactly right. And, of course, you've mentioned two of the factors we talk about in the book here. One is the warning sign. If it's an appeal to fear, if it's scary, be wary. It's always good if somebody is appealing to you to do something, or you'll be killed or get sick or lose money or something like that. Just stop and raise the kind of questions you mentioned. And, of course, the other is letting your language do your thinking for you, framing the issue, war on terror. We're not calling it the diplomatic initiative against terror. We're calling it a war. So we sort of fall into the notion that if we're going to go after terrorists, it's got to be a war. Kind of like the war on drugs. How's that going lately? Not very well, the last time I looked.
We're talking with Brooks Jackson. He runs the Annenberg Public Policy Center's website, factcheck.org. Was an investigative reporter for the Associated Press, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN. He is co-author of the new book with Kathleen Hall Jamieson, Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. We're talking about the tricks that are used to deceive us, or to mislead us, or to sell us something, the warning signs of spin, hype, and bogus news, and how you can find trustworthy and objective sources of information. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. A recent study reveals that anti-depression prescriptions are at an all-time high. Kathleen and her guest will talk about the relationship between depression and green space. That sounds interesting. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with the co-author of the book Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation. Jim is with us. He's listening in Salt Lake City via the Internet, Jim?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Joy. Hey, I went to this one seminar one time, and I heard Roger Ailes talk about President Reagan's term, how they loved it when they were talking about the Iran-Contra scandal, because there was no footage of weapons being sold or traded or whatever, but they just showed the president waving every day, going on the ranch or to the helicopter. And he said nobody was listening to the audio. Everybody just felt good seeing the president looking happy, doing these important things. He said it was actually good publicity for the president at that time. And then my other comment is the Abramoff scandal. When Congressman Delaney was arrested, and they booked his photo or took his photo in jail, he smiled like he won re-election or
That's right.
The presidency. And they told him, don't look negative, look positive, because nobody will hear what's going on. They'll just see your face on TV.
Yes, examples of eye candy as well. I never thought I'd refer to Tom DeLay as eye candy, but
there you are.
But I think the caller has put his finger.
But that was funny.
Yeah,
he had this huge smile on his face, and that's what he was like. I'm not going to let my critics see me scowling. But yeah, if you see a celebrity in a bad mugshot, you get this more negative feeling about that person.
Right. Well, yeah. And I don't know if. The statement about the Iran-Contra scandal was true or not, that could be making the best of a bad situation for all I know. But it's absolutely true that visual information, our brains just absorb much more readily, and we have to be aware of that. Sometimes the facts don't lie in the pictures. They lie in the words.
Yeah. In fact, Leslie Stahl, that story about her, a report that she did that was critical of
that
the Reagan
true.
Administration.
Yeah, yeah. She had done a very critical story of them, and she tells this in her autobiography, and we repeat it in the book as an example of this very effect. She was astonished when she got a call from Dick Darman in the White House saying, we loved your story. And she said, what? I did nothing but criticize the president. But the pictures were great. Don't you get it?
Yeah.
And they
he said nobody's listening to what you're saying, you know.
Well, and to a large extent that's true. Mm-hmm. And that's why when we do ad watches, we mm-hmm. journalists on television now, we if we're doing it right, we take pains to use the images to tell the story and make them work in concert with our words rather than fighting the words. What you, as a journalist, you learn that if the words are fighting the pictures are going to win every time.
Derek in Round Lake is next. Hi, Derek.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to your guests, too. One thing I also have noticed, that current amount of spin and propaganda is often being used by Americans for the American public, and the best antidote to that would be to read the foreign press. I regularly read Die Zeit out of Germany, El País from Spain, Corriere della Sera from Italy, Tribune from Poland. And what I really see is very good coverage of information, of events, not only from the international perspective, but what's going on in the United States. A lot of those sites have the English version, where people can actually read to what's really happening. And I think I've been really sort of campaigning for a year now with the National Public Radio to actually maybe introduce a program, let's say 1 hour per week, so there will be foreign media review done for the listeners, so they're able to disconcern all the facts and be able to understand things from a little bit international perspective, because that's really which you get more of a truthful coverage of information.
Yeah. Well, do we have to fact-check our own stuff by looking at the foreign press, Brooks Jackson?
Well, it's always a good principle to never rely on a single source. If you want to get reliable information, you really do need to go beyond just one source of information. I think what most broadcasters, television networks, find is that if it's that effect that we talked about before, the I don't want to hear it effect. If people are hearing foreign coverage that conflicts with what they already believe, they're probably not going to even watch the program. So unfortunately, we don't get enough of that kind of coverage, and we're not exposed as a public to enough alternative sources of information, and we tend to select down to those that that we agree with. It's just a natural human tendency, and it's manifested in the way that we program television news, and that's a sad fact, but it's a fact.
Well, I know you do a lot of this sorting out on your website, factcheck.org. So that's one place where we can go to, you know, to get objective information on some of these issues. But I mean, how do we sort, you know, through all this mush and find that trustworthy, objective source of information?
Well, if I could ask the listeners to take away just one idea, it would be to practice what one of our University of Pennsylvania colleagues is called active open-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to, if you don't want to get spun, if you want to be unspun, to use the title of the book, you've got to make an effort to keep your mind open. And it's not to say you've got to agree with the other side, but every now and then it's a good idea to stop and say, well, now, wait a minute, do they have a point here? Is there some evidence that I'm overlooking or not giving sufficient weight to? You might conclude that you've been right all along, and that's fine. But unless you go through that process, you're sure to be spun eventually.
Yeah. Next we go to Scott in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. The case that I have that I really am bothered by, it usually involves local news media, but sometimes national, where you'll hear a lead that will run, armed robberies up 50% in, let's say, a specific town. Well, when you find out the details, last year there were two armed robberies. This year there were three. So So, yeah, you're right. Technically, it's up 50%, but it was one more robbery. And yet, you know, to fluff up the hype to get people to watch, they'll lead it that way. And, of course, if you pay attention, you know better. But if you don't pay attention, the next thing you'll know, you'll be in the supermarket and hear people saying, my God, did you know? You know, and so, of course, they've fear-mongered, maybe inadvertently, but they got the ratings, I suppose.
No, it's true. People do have a if they see a lot of crime coverage, they tend to think that there's more crime in their area than there actually is, and it's just a psychological effect. You assume that what you're hearing about, the volume of information you're getting must somehow reflect the underlying reality, and it's not always true.
And I kind of laugh whenever I hear an ad that does say something like the fastest growing news program, you know, or something like that. That's kind of deceiving because it could mean you had, you know, zero people watching you yesterday and now one person is watching you today. So there's a huge jump in how many people are you know.
Right.
We are going to go next to Kevin in Madison. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi. I want to ask if your guest considers the use of the false choices to be an example of spin, like, you know, your choices between this extreme or that extreme, and, you know, they don't talk about the options in between. Like, for example, even like with global warming, it's, well, we either have to do nothing or we have to, like, you know, spend trillions of dollars and just utterly destroy our economy, you know, or, you know, you're either for the war or you're a cut-and-run isolationist.
Oh.
Or, you know, we either have to, like, have our 10-mile-per-gallon SUV, or we can, our only other option is hydrogen fuel cars that are 50, you know, years down the road. Whereas, you know, in actuality, you know, there's, like, energy-efficient SUVs, you know, for those people who need them. So,
yeah, sort of that dichotomy is our false choices on the extreme ends. Is that an example of...
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, what we say about spin is... let me just give a little sermon on this subject. What we say about spin is that it's just a polite word for deception. And I think that too many reporters in Washington, my friends and colleagues here, have been so used to covering politics as a kind of sport, that covering who's ahead, who's behind. We talk about who's a good fundraiser, who's a bad fundraiser, who's a good strategist, who's a bad strategist, who's a good poll taker, who's not so good a poll taker. And we talk about spin doctors in the same way, as though we're talking about a pitcher who's got a great knuckleball and can really put one by the batter. Unfortunately, it's the voter who's getting things put by them in this case. And some of the techniques that these political spin doctors use, and commercial as well, we've talked mostly here about politics, but the book is really about commercial advertising as well. These are despicable tactics, and they're meant to deceive the public, sometimes to a lesser degree, sometimes to a greater degree. But it's that kind of deception that we want people to be aware of, and want them to know where they can go to get reliable information.
Yeah. But what about, let's talk about the weasel words that advertisers will use sometimes.
Well, sure. That's the definition of weasel words is that they are words that somehow suck the meaning out of a phrase or a sentence, like a weasel sucks an egg. Everybody's familiar with the principle. If you see a sale where everything in the store is up to 50% off, well, you walk in, you find two or three things might be 50% off, but everything else is probably, you know, 10, 20, 5% off. The weasel words here are up to. It's a qualifying phrase that sucks the meaning out of the sentence, and there are plenty of examples of this.
Yeah. We got an email from John in Milwaukee who says, one of the most damaging and successful, not necessarily scary, examples of spin was when Al Gore was asked about his accomplishments by a talk show host, and he said that he was responsible for the funding support in Congress that created the Internet. It was spun to say that Al Gore was claiming he invented the Internet. An example of spin?
I think that's, yes, in the way it was used by some of Al Gore's political opponents, the chief culprits here, I think, were the late-night comedians mm-hmm. who just loved the idea that Gore had said something so, you know, colossally egotistical and demonstrably untrue when he hadn't really said it. So it was just one of those things that was, for the comedians anyway, too good to check out.
Yeah. We did have also a caller who couldn't hold who did want to point out an example of a pesticide, a lawn care company. I'm not going to say the name, but that will fertilize and put pesticides on your lawns, that their advertising has smiling kids and dogs playing on the grass. And he, of course, believes that pesticides are poison, and but those pretty those pretty pictures of the dogs and kids playing on the grass deceive us.
Sure. Yeah. And another example is drug company advertising. When you see pharmaceuticals advertised, frequently you have seen pictures of dogs and smiling children and balloons rising up in the air while the announcer is talking about the most horrible side effects that are possible from this medication. You're going to bleed from the eyes and your fingers and toes will fall off. I'm exaggerating here,
right.
But it's a use of eye candy to distract you from what the announcer is saying.
Yeah, and beware of those larger, better, faster, better tasting words, too.
Oh, yes. Well, it's what we call the dangling comparative. Every time you hear a word that's like faster, better, more, a cut, implying that something's going down, you've got to ask yourself, compared to what? Brighter than what? Often it's not brighter than the other product, it's or your clothes aren't going to be brighter than if you'd use the other product, but somewhat brighter than if you'd used the same product in its previous formulation.
Yeah.
All sorts of examples of that in the book.
Well, we only have less than a minute to go. Anything that you think is important to help us be unspun before we let you go?
Well, I just come back to keeping an open mind, actually examining what the other side is saying in addition to your own, so you don't get spun by your own biases. But also, being aware of the tricks that that are played, and knowing where to go for some reliable information that you can trust.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Brooks Jackson is the co-author of Unspun: Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation, and you can get more information at the website factcheck.org. Brooks Jackson, investigative reporter for the Associated Press, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN. He runs the Annenberg Public Policy Center's website. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Cheryl Gasser for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.